This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. On what is turning into a crispier Friday here. Matt, Sasha, just FYI, Brett Johnson going to join us here in a little bit. We're going to talk to Ryan Winkler, and he's going to talk a little bit about the legalized marijuana bill that they're putting forward, amongst other things. That's coming up here in just a little bit. Sasha, it is just a touch brisk out there. If you get in the wind.
Just a touch. That's a real Minnesotan talking there.
Well, it is. I actually went for a walk today because I knew that I was not going to be able to get out the next, at least next 4 days.
Yeah.
Next 4 days. As a matter of fact, it doesn't seem like we had Sven Sundgaard on yesterday. It doesn't seem like we're going to get down to that minus 20 that he was kind of hoping we might, because we actually need to get down there. That helps take care of a lot of these invasive species and stuff like that. Unfortunately, we're going to get close. We're going to get minus 15.
We'll give those species a battering for sure.
Tonight, minus 3. Tomorrow, high of 1 degree. On Saturday night, minus 15. Sunday, minus 1 as the high now. On Sunday night, minus 12. 0 on Monday, minus 12 Monday night. 2 on Tuesday, so it's going to get a bit of a chill. But it's not that bad. It's 9 now. It was earlier this afternoon. Earlier this morning, I was actually out. It was about 13 degrees. And I hiked Purgatory Creek Park, which is over here in Eden Prairie. It's actually kind of near us here, over by Eden Prairie Center, kind of where they're building that last light rail station that's going to be on the Southwest Light Rail Line. It's right by there. And it was one of those where if I was out in the open and the wind was hitting me, it was brutal. And as a matter of fact, I've got that feeling across my eyes. I had a gator on over my schnoz, and I had my good winter cap on here. I got my bad boy here. Yeah, this is 100% stylish, kind of Ruski cap going on.
I've got the same one.
It's a nice cap, man. Yeah. It's warm.
Yeah, seriously.
If you're watching, you can see the cap. I'll leave it on for a second. If you want to go watch the show, it's live streaming on Facebook at AM 950 Radio and, of course, Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show. But I had the good hat on, but I had this, of course, open area where my eyes were. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm feeling it there. You know, I still feel the difference there. It is going to be quite cool. So, and not a big surprise, I don't think, on this. I think even, I don't know if Sven had mentioned this yesterday or mentioned it in one of his YouTube videos, but the Lopit Foundation has called off its 2 ski races scheduled for the weekend. The organization is cutting short its Luminary Lopit, which will have its final day this Friday. Temperatures predicted to sink well below zero, accompanied by dangerously low wind chills, led organizers to modify the final weekend of the outdoor events at Theo Worth Park in Minneapolis, according to a statement from the foundation. With COVID-19 protocols in place, preventing groups of people from huddling together near fires or inside the trailhead is preventing us from distributing warm hot chocolate like past years. We have to come to the conclusion today would be unfair and dangerous to subject our participants and the volunteers who spend hours outside to make it happen to such conditions. And so, smart call. I mean, it's hard to see, but it's going to be some indoor weather. I mean, it's going to be some indoor weather. And so, Just bundle up, take care. If you're going to be out, make sure you have that emergency kit in your car. Make sure you know, there was a guy yesterday, and I think the police had pulled over. I think the guy's car broke down out on 169, and he was hiking up one of the exit ramps, and the police were there. He didn't have a jacket on. And the police were like, I think that's why the police pulled over to try to give him a hand. I got to take this off. This is warm. I can take that off. It's a warm hat. So do you remember when we were talking about Zug Zug?
Of course, I'll never forget
Zug Zug, the caveman who's over at Theo Worth Park. I brought up Theo Worth Park here with the Lopit, and it reminded me that Zara, Zug Zug's girlfriend, has been found. Although I'm not sure where she's at. There is a Facebook group called Minnesota Hiking Minnesota. I'm part of that group. And someone out there, it's a river trail. There's a large river. I'm not sure which river. But it's got to be, I don't think there's any rivers south of Mille Lacs that would be as big as this one. So, or north of Mille Lacs, right? That would be as big as this one. So I believe it's got to be one of the parks south of Mille Lacs on a river trail. And there's Zara, the beautiful bride-to-be for Zug Zug. She has been found, although I don't have any idea where she's at right now. So
there's pictures, or is this somebody trying to take credit?
It is a picture of sure looks like. I mean, is Zug? They didn't take Zug Zug, did they? I mean, Zug Zug's still over at Theo Worth, I believe. So it's got to be Zara because it's the same exact setup. I've seen Zug Zug; it's her. And so she's in her own ice block, probably ice block at this point. And so I got to still find Zara. If it's anywhere, say, within 150 miles of the metro, I'm going to go get it. I'm going to go see it. I'm just going to go see it. I think it's just fun to have stuff like that. And, you know, it's hard with it being so cold. You can't really get on out. Although I should mention St. Paul Winter Carnival going on this weekend. So, I mean, they still have the drive-through for the snow and ice sculptures. And the Vulcans do have their fire machine out there. So that will help you out a little bit, too, if you start getting cold. 952-946-6205. What is, Sasha, your favorite Christopher Plummer movie?
Again, this is one of those moments where I have to tell you, Matt, unfortunately, I don't know who that is.
You don't know Baron Von Trapp from The Sound of Music?
Oh, no. I've been told about this. I was somebody texted me today. Oh my God, can you believe he died? And I was like, who is that? So I had this moment already today.
All right, well, that's good. I'm glad you're okay. Christopher Plummer passed away. He was 91 years old. A heck of a run. He, of course, won. I went to look at his career. And by the way, I want to make sure I mention, I never did get to this earlier. Hal Holbrook died too. Hal Holbrook, and I'm not going to even ask you, Sasha, I already know. What? It's Hal Holbrook, of course, in numerous movies, of course, probably most well known for being Deep Throat in All the President's Men with Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. He's been in a lot of things. He was known for playing Mark Twain. I had just watched John Carpenter's The Fog, the original The Fog, and he plays the priest in that movie. And it's, I think, an underrated film. Don't watch the remake. Oh, God, did they destroy that. Anyway, but he was not. You want something bizarre? Christopher Plummer was not nominated for an Oscar for Sound of Music. Lee Marvin won it that year. Julie Andrews was nominated, but didn't win. Julie Christie won that year. The Sound of Music won Best Picture, and at Wise won Best Director. But I just watched that again. And you want to know the truth? One of the things which is just amazing about Sound of Music is not only is it just a fun little film with the dancing and the singing, very enjoyable, but when you see Christopher Plummer rip a Nazi flag in half, bravo! I mean, of course, it takes place in Austria during the Anschluss, where the Germans were trying to absorb Austria into Germany. And, you know, it's as relevant today to a point as it was back then. And, I mean, everything about that movie is just perfect, including Christopher Plummer, who is just great in that film. The movies, I just as well watched The Insider. That's the one about the 60 Minutes article on the cigarette whistleblower, that it, basically the guy that basically blew the whistle that the cigarettes were addictive. And it has Russell Crowe, Al Pacino's, and it's a great film. It's a great film, The Insider. He plays Mike Wallace. And you know how hard – it's hard for a guy to take and play a character who at that time was still on TV doing his job. And there is an just epic scene with him in that movie where there's some corporate stooge from CBS coming in and she goes, come on, Mike. And he looks at her and goes, Mike? Mr. Wallace, thank you. It's a great film. If you haven't seen that one, that's worthwhile. Of course, he won his one Oscar for a supporting role in Beginners, I believe it was. All the Money in the World, A Beautiful Mind, Knives Out. He was just in Knives Out. And it's funny because we talk about Knives Out. Knives Out was might have been the last movie I saw in a theater before this whole thing came down and the pandemic came down. Knives Out might have been the last film I saw in a theater. And he was brilliant in that. Just as it's just he just you know just chewed up the scenery. Oh, he was just fantastic. I also will remember him as the grandfather in the first National Treasure, Nicolas Cage's grandfather. He was that, and and by the way, and just with the right wing guy that took over. I try not to pay attention too much to the right wing trolls that inhabit the world. Anyway, Nick Nolte? No, that's not him. Angelina Jolie's dad. Who is that? Oh, God. Anyway, he actually made that movie. If you go back, I will make this argument. The beginning of that movie is Christopher Plummer, and it's the only part he's in, is the very beginning of National Treasure, is he recants the story of the treasure coming to America and how it's lost in America now. And talks about the Charlotte, and then they cut to Nicolas Cage and Sean Bean, in the Arctic, which it really set that movie up so well. And I can say that, and most people, oh yeah, I remember that character because you do. And I still can't remember the name of the dad. He was just he was garbage. And go back to your right wing world, just stooge. that one hurts. That one hurts. Hal Holbrook hurts too. I'm not going to pass on that. I will the man who invented Christmas as well. He showed up in that one. Played a few characters in that. Now Christopher Plummer, I think is my daughter and I were talking today. He said, and she made the point, and this. First of all, I'll give her credit. She's 16 years old. The fact she said, well, it's not like she was Carrie Fisher. I'm like, okay. So it's not like she said something like – it's not like she was Taylor Swift. And I'm like, oh, God. She did say it was Carrie Fisher. And Carrie Fisher, of course, is an iconic actress. And I actually said, you want to know the truth? No. He's almost exactly like Carrie Fisher. I mean I would make an argument that his film resume is I think, quite a bit longer. He did a lot of stuff. I mean, for a while there, he was in Thornbirds. I forget he was in Thornbirds, for goodness sakes. But, he's exact, and to my mind, he's a lot like Carrie Fisher, known most of all for one role. And as a matter of fact, I mean, it's very, it's not that Hootie and the Blowfish didn't put out other albums, but they had one really big album, and pretty much no one else bought any of the other albums. And, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, it's not that people don't know him, and the people went and saw his movies, and Knives Out was a big hit, actually, and I mean, you should say it like that. But he will always be known as Baron Von Trapp, and from the Sound of Music, and imagine it must be kind of hard to have such an iconic role as one of your first. Actually, looking at his resume and looking at the time, he did a ton of stuff. Canadian guy, did a ton of TV shows and movies and stuff like that as bit role players before Sound of Music came on out. But he. He'll forever be known for that scene. And let's face it, how many of us, raise your hand, I will, I'm raising both, have in the last 4 years shared the GIF or image of Christopher Plummer ripping up the Nazi flag from Sound of Music? I have. The hills are alive. Over here. I'm not going to try to sing Climb Every Mountain. That one gets up into the high notes. So, yeah. It's Christopher Plummer. Wow, God, what an icon. And really was just an icon. And did someone call in and give us the name of all right.
That's right. Mike from Minneapolis said John Voight is the
– Oh, for God's sakes, I had to erase that from my mind. Mike, damn it.
You were right.
John Voight. It goes back to the old trick, and National Treasure is the old trick. You want Nicolas Cage to look good on screen, get someone a lot less appealing to go up there with him. John Voight's around. Make him dad. I'm not going to pull punches on that one. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, there was a letter to the editor today. I'm going to dismantle it when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Friday. Oh, everyone wants to remind me who John Voight is. Oh, for God's sakes. Him, Scott Baio, Dean Cain. I don't need to know these people. I mean, isn't it been nicer? I'm not joking. Ever since they cleared out Twitter, my mind has been starting to filter out the stuff that I had to pay attention to, but I don't know. I no longer have to. When they get rid of Marjorie Taylor Greene, that will be a big plus. Twitter, please. Jack. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So, today, and I imagine if you've taken any time to go up onto the Twitter feed or onto the Facebook feed, you'll see that I've already commented a little bit about the editorial letter that was put out by Kim Voss. She is a former Minneapolis police officer, a lieutenant, I believe. She was at the 3rd Precinct, and the editorial is this: why I am one of many former Minneapolis Police Department officers. Minneapolis police officers have gotten no support in the aftermath of the 2020 protests, and many are struggling with PTSD. Now, it's a shame you've got PTSD. Doesn't surprise me. That was a pretty, I was tearing up just at the New York Times end of year edition and the photos of Minneapolis that were included in that of what was going on. And so it's a shame. And myself, I've actually had post-traumatic stress. I have a cousin that had a very serious problem with that. It's a shame that you have it. But that's literally all the concessions I'm going to make to Kim Voss. The first thing I noticed about this letter to the editor is at no point in the letter does this woman acknowledge, and I guess I should say Kim is, it could be a man, but Officer Voss, Lieutenant Voss, doesn't even acknowledge George Floyd murdered by 4 Minneapolis police officers, which is, to say the least, a smidge of an oversight. On top of that, there clearly is – there's a narrative here that's being put forward. Now, I'll tell you what. Let me first go through – as I read this, I mean, I almost instantly came up with these rebuttals to her letter to the editor. The first was, she doesn't address George Floyd at any point or people killed or harassed by police. Not once. That this is some sort of organic, out-of-nowhere protest that burned down the 3rd Precinct. And that is just, that's irresponsible. And by the way, my opinion, revisionist history, an attempt by her to try to say, oh, that didn't matter. People weren't upset about that. It was other things. And the fact, how do you not include that, at least in the sense being as what happened to George Floyd was truly a tragedy? How do you not include that in your letter? Once again, it's a shame you have PTSD. But if I can point out, do you not think everyone that was at Cup Foods that watched what Derek Chauvin did to George Floyd, you think they don't have PTSD? How about the video that came to light earlier this week where Derek Chauvin, a few weeks before George Floyd, pulls an innocent guy out because he's black and puts his knee on his back? And then arrest the brother just because the brother's like, what are you doing? While, by the way, should mention, the actual criminal got away. Good police work, Minneapolis PD. You don't think that that guy's got PTSD? You don't think his brother's got PTSD? You don't think the brother that Vilmnis that ran for his life because he realized he was about to get arrested by these officers doesn't have PTSD? Jamar Clark? I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, you know, Philando Castile, I mean, all the people. Now, Philando Castile was out of the city of Minneapolis, but my God, you've got numerous cases of police behavior which has caused PTSD. And trust me, the amount of PTSD handed out by the Minneapolis police far exceeds the amount of PTSD anyone in the police department might have right now. And it's just this idea of trying to paint yourself as victims, as frankly, and once again, I feel sorry that you got PTSD, but you guys have been handing it out like it's an old country frickin' buffet. Dear Lord. Talk about tone deaf. And put those two together. Admitting the George Floyd death and then saying that, you know, boy, it's been tough on us. I'm not saying it has been tough on you, but you don't think it's been tough on a lot of other people? Dear Lord. Dear Lord. The next things I noticed, first of all, was sorry. I mean, she goes through this whole thing where she got hacked and she was and all these things. And okay, I'm sorry you got hacked. I mean, that's tough. I'm bad. I feel sorry for you. But do you understand that every time the Minneapolis police has shot someone and there's a question on whether or not there was a crime going on to justify or warrant the shooting of the individual, that the Minneapolis police has done a character assassination of everyone that this goes through? And I mean a character assassination. They're gangbangers. They're drug dealers. Their whole family is a crime syndicate. My God, you guys have character assassinated victim after victim after victim after victim, while at the same time hiding from the media your disciplinary records. You know, you want character assassination. You guys have mastered, for God's sakes, Pointergate. Pointergate! That is all that was a character assassination. So I'm sorry that they hacked you and they scammed you. That's bad. But my God, that's not pot calling kettle black. That is, you know, the axe murderer saying the real criminal's over there being the shoplifter. You know, no. You guys have character assassinated people after person after person. It is amazing. Another point, she refers to herself in this letter and all police as warriors. I'm going to move the microphone away. You're not warriors! Stop saying that! For God's sakes, you're police officers! I was in the military. I'm a veteran. If I called, if I said we're warriors, my drill sergeant would have smacked me in the head. We're soldiers. You're police officers. You think on Andy Griffith's show that Andy and Barney were out there in the squad car going, we're warriors. No, you're not warriors. You're police officers. And there is a huge part of your freaking problem. You think, what are you, the ultimate warrior from WWE? Is that what you think you are? You're not warriors. You're police officers. If you want to go be a warrior, go put on some tights and join the frickin' WWE. I want cops, not drunk fools playing cop on the weekend and saying, we're warriors, we're tough guys. Ugh. No, you're not warriors, you're a cop. Dear Lord. She then goes on to make the point that she tries to compare what happened in Minneapolis to what happened in Washington, D.C., as far as post-traumatic stress with the individuals. And she comes out and she says Trump wasn't responsible for what happened on the 6th of January. What are you talking about? Of course he was responsible, Kim. Kim, he was responsible. pretty much every Republican the next day came on out and bashed him, saying, yeah, he was responsible for it. If you've read any of the news coverage of it, Kim, and I'm going to guess you're going to say, well, those liberal media. No, it's factual. If you read the Washington Post and the New York Times and you read the BBC and their in-depth analysis of what's exactly happened, I read it here. What was it? Last Friday I read it here. Where we broke down, or was it on Monday? I broke down basically, it said, it talked about how their game plan was initially to take these cases to court, which they got laughed out of court. Then the next thing was to have the Attorney General of Texas to try to put together a Supreme Court case that they would stop the December count of the Electoral College. And then it was trying to pressure Mike Pence. I mean, it was clearly, it was all coming from the White House. The rally was coordinated by people from the White House. The money for the rally was coordinated for people at the White House. There's a ton of people that were experienced in the White House who were there. For God's sakes, Trump did that. And I'll get back to that here in just a little bit, because that kind of gives up the ghost a little bit. And then the one thing, the entire time, I mean, in this entire story, I mean, she talks about, who's you people calling these peaceful protesters? Hey, who in the hell was calling the people that were burning building peaceful protesters? That's you doing what the Minneapolis police has freaking done for 20 years, which is find the worst people at those events and applying their behavior to everyone there to justify your hatred, justify your horrible actions, and justify your anger. Warrior crap. No, the people that have tortured them, those are the criminals. Many of them not from Minneapolis. Spoiler alert. Many of them white supremacists. I know. Isn't that, God forbid we pay attention to the facts, Kim? But she just, people calling these people peaceful protesters. You mean the people that the police car drove by and pepper sprayed from a distance? Yeah, those were peaceful protesters. Please. But she goes on out there and she tries to portray what she was doing as this sort of, we were nobly trying to hold the police precinct. No, your actions during this entire thing are far from noble, Kim. For God's sakes. You, first of all, George Floyd. And then if you guys were all about nobility and being above it all, then why were you it clearly looked like you guys were shooting at the media. Why did you attack the media repeatedly in the days of those events? Because that seems to be what was going on. And there's no nobility or honor in any of that. I'm going to take a break. I'm running a little late here. Julie, I'll get your call here in a second. But we're going to take a break. When I come on back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what the real motivation here is and what her real goal seems to be. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I wanted to make sure I thank Todd Colet, who's sponsoring AM 950 this week. Of course, Todd lives in Spain. Would love to visit our businesses, but that is not a good commute, especially in the day and age of COVID. And so what he does is he sponsors the radio station, and we're very grateful for it. It's very nice of him to do that. You can, too, if you'd like. Just call us up, 952-946-8885. That's 952-946-8885. They've redone it. Sounds like they redid their song, A Hard Winter. Jesse King is featured on it. Just Folk is his band. Just Folk's got the new version of that out. I'll link to all that a little bit later on. Go and enjoy that. And thank you very much, Todd. We do appreciate it. And he's got the calendar. You've got a calendar in Europe. That's one of my calendars is in Europe. That's weird. That is weird. But enjoy. I'm glad you like it. Thank you very much for the very kind words about that. 952-946-6205. Let's get Julie. Julie's been on hold for a while. Let's get Julie on in here. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Say, I wanted to jump in with a couple of things. Yeah, I suffer from PTSD also. I know that it's not a good thing. I've been a longtime resident in the 3rd Precinct in Minneapolis, so I've paid very close attention to what went on and what goes on. I recall reading in the Minneapolis paper that several weeks after the event, they caught the guy that set fire to the precinct. And this is a quote from the paper. He was a 22-year-old white male from the Brainerd Lakes area.
Yep.
I don't. So I'm not talking about Umbrella Man now, Matt. This is the individual, and really quick,
Umbrella Man was the white supremacist from Wisconsin they caught who started all the damage when he was busting the windows over the AutoZone. So please.
This is a different individual. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was I was listening to the radio very carefully, and there was a WCCO reporter that was down there earlier in the day, like the late morning of the day that incident occurred. And the police, there are several police officers who came out and they shoved her. They didn't want her interviewing or talking to anybody. So I just want to remind people of those things so you get a balanced view of the violence, and we can't let people forget in other parts of the state.
Oh, and Julie, you touched on it there. You can't allow people like Kim to rewrite what happened. Thank you very much, Julie. No, how about the media guy who got lost an eye? The guy who lost an eye out there. I mean, you don't think he's got PTSD? Trying to cover this, trying to do his job, and, seems to have been targeted. A lot of media seems to have been targeted. I know a lot of people in media, and they were saying, oh, they'd find out they were media, and they'd be pushing and they'd be, threatening them. And then, of course, it seemed to open fire on them. That's what it seemed like. I want to get to the final point that I made this morning on this letter. And once again, I'm not going to read it. I don't think it's worth reading because it's an agenda item. It's an agenda. At the end of the day, the Trump line gave it away. When she's like, Trump didn't do this. It wasn't Trump. Yeah, it was. No, it was Donald Trump. Donald Trump led a traitorous, treasonous, terrorist mob on the Capitol of the United States. Yes, he did. So why would that even be in here? On this. Well, this is not for anyone in Minneapolis. This is not really for anyone in the core Twin Cities, including the first few suburbs. This letter is for outstate Republicans who want to keep pushing the narrative. The poor police officers there. Those mean inner city people. They don't trust them. They were so mean to them. George Floyd. Why do you keep bringing that up? That's kind of what this narrative is. And it was a narrative that was pushed around a lot this last election cycle. And they clearly want to keep going with this. And Kim seems to have done an editorial letter, which seems almost perfectly fit for trying to get into campaign ads later down the road. Now, let's not skip past something that Kim also doesn't want to talk about. Pretty much every freaking police department in the country, county sheriff, state patrol, major metropolitan cities, for God's sakes, across the country, condemned the Minneapolis Police Department for actions which were beyond the pale. My God, they were critical of you. Even places like Alabama were saying, wow, that is absolutely out of control. This wasn't just loony liberals in the Minneapolis City Council and the police department. Every cop thought you guys sucked at what you did. Every one of them. And none of you guys in Minneapolis wanted to really come on out there and say, boy, those guys should be arrested. That's uncalled for. You guys went mum. Hey, the first letter that Bob Kroll put out was calling for them to get their jobs back, for God's sakes. And the fact that your letter, Kim, completely omits the fact that the Minneapolis police caused this through years of mistreatment of the citizens that you have vowed to protect and serve. That's what it said on the badge. That's what it said on your cars. And you missed all that. And no one is condoning burning down the third precinct or any of the damage. It was God awful. And by the way, I don't think, Julie, I think multiple people have been caught for burning down the precinct. But that being said, this seems to be trying to set up a narrative for 2022. Yesterday, we had the story of Paul Gazelka, even though the Derek Chauvin trial is coming up here, and we pretty much know violence is probably going to happen. probably because a lot of white supremacists and white guys that are not from Minneapolis are going to come in to try to start stuff in the Twin Cities, that he wanted $35 million to get security in place and ready to go for the city of Minneapolis. That was Governor Walz. Paul Gazelka comes out and says, we ain't giving you nothing and we're going to take the money away. Something of that. I mean, it was really dignified there, Paul. Really dignified. Baby Ruth. And yesterday I made a point, and I've taken a little grief on this, but I'll stand by it. I'm a little concerned about what the hell really is going on after Gazelka's little press conference, where he basically says, we're not going to give you anything. Then once again, if we have people show up like it was in May, right-wingers from out of the metro area that were coming into the town to cause the problems, well, we're starting to sound a hell of a lot like what happened in Washington, D.C., where violent far-right extremists flooded into that town, tried to overthrow the government. Meanwhile, orders were made to prevent the National Guard from going on out. Here, we've got what seems to be the Republican Party trying to stop any sort of common sense response to the potential problems of that could happen with the Derek Chauvin trial, and they're not going to give any money whatsoever for this. And on top of that, we already know that we're probably going to see an influx of right-wing people trying to come in here and cause troubles. To say the least, you should be a little concerned. And I asked the question. I mean, the question needs to be asked. In the same sense that Donald Trump worked with the groups and incited that riot to get them to go storm the Capitol, and we had Republicans actually show up at the Minnesota Storm the Capitol rally and go over there and start, and I don't think the Republicans that went over, but the rally itself eventually went over to the governor's mansion and they had to evacuate the governor's son. So the question needs to be asked, is anyone that has an official title within the Republican Party of Minnesota currently working with potentially far-right groups to cause some problems? So that they can get some campaign talking points, some images of Minneapolis is out of control and we're the ones that stand by the Minneapolis police. I'm asking the question. I'm not making a statement. I'm asking the question. Is there any connection? Because that's about the only damn thing missing from this setup versus what happened on the 6th. And I'm a little concerned about where things are going. Now you have this letter where the real victims. Fine. You want to believe that, that's fine. But your letter is basically, it's such a joke, it's not even funny. And I'm not, you have your post-traumatic stress? Fine. A lot of people have post-traumatic stress. How about the family of George Floyd? You don't think they got some post-traumatic stress? It doesn't seem to cross your editorial at all. I'm a little concerned. Now, it should be noted there is one breaking story today that Governor Walz has already actually activated the National Guard. He signed an executive order on Friday that will activate the Minnesota National Guard ahead of the trial of former Minneapolis Police Officer Derek Chauvin in March. The preparation of the National Guard was one of many steps the state is taking in anticipation of potential unrest around the trial, which is set to start on March 8th. So, I want to make sure we understand exactly what just happened here. Governor Walz wanted $35 million for the Minneapolis Police Department to prepare themselves for the security for this trial. He was looking for money. Parts of it would go to that. Probably not all of it, but parts of it would have gone to the Minneapolis Police Department to help them out. They were looking for additional funding for the Minneapolis Police. Paul Gazelka said no. Paul Gazelka said, we're not going to fund the Minneapolis police. So he forced the hand of the governor, who's just going to call it the National Guard right now anyway. And so that's where you're at. I'm sure Kim Voss is about to write that letter, how angry she is at Paul Gazelka for stopping $35 million worth of funding for the Minneapolis police in this. I mean, doesn't Paul Gazelka understand the stress that people like Kim Voss have been under? They need their politicians to back them up. This is, I guess, a failure. Oh, she's not going to write that letter. No, she's not going to write that.
That letter's not going to... Okay, I see. She's probably not even considering that, is it? But, I mean, that's a fact. I mean, Governor Walz wanted $35 million for Minneapolis police, partially at least. And Paul Gazelka said, no, we're not going to give you... And we're not going to give the Minneapolis Police Department any money. Who's playing politics now? But the one thing I like about Governor Walz is he doesn't mess around. And, you know, it's the right call to get the National Guard up ready to go. It's the right call. And maybe we should send some of the National Guard up to some of these outstate areas where we know notorious villains who have infiltrated our city have come from, like, you know, the Brainerd Lakes area. I mean, I think there's someone that came from up in the north of the metro, up in kind of the Cambridge area. I thought there was one from there and a few from Wisconsin. Maybe we set up the National Guard on the border. You come in with an umbrella and a face mask, we're not going to let you come on in. No. Maybe that's what we need to do, too. It's a disappointment. And like I said, it's a shame that Kim has got PTSD. It is. But, like I said, you guys were the old country buffet of PTSD when you were the Minneapolis police, because there are tons of people, thousands of people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, that because of police actions have PTSD. Don't try to revisionist history on this, Kim. Don't. And once again, if you want to get mad at someone not funding the police, your next call is to Paul Gazelka, not Governor Walz, not Mayor Fry, and sure as heck not Chief Arredondo. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, got Ryan Winkler coming up here with Brett Johnson in just a little bit to talk about some of the issues with the DFL in the House. I want to bring up a story, because one of the points we made yesterday about Paul Gazelka and the House Republicans screaming about, we're not going to give any money to Minneapolis. Or not House Republicans, Senate Republicans. But as they were making this point, we made the point yesterday that there are 60 counties in the state of Minnesota, which pretty much are all Republican counties, which get far more money back in taxpayer dollars than they put into the system. The reason why is that the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul basically subsidize the rest of the state, and we do. And the point I made yesterday is it's maybe it's time for a lawsuit against the state, particularly Paul Gazelka, that says, fine, if you're not going to give us money when it's needed by the city, then maybe, just maybe, what we should do is that you can only get the same amount of money that you put into the system. That if your county only puts, say, $1 million for the taxes in, you can only get $1 million back in help into your community. Not the $1.5 million, which you have been getting, courtesy of the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area, which subsidizes your taxes. I brought up a Bluestem Prairie story. There's another Bluestem Prairie story. In a recent post, Bluestem joined the conversation prompted by a commentary by former News Services columnist Mike McFeely. You know the metro area subsidizes rural Minnesota, right? In Thursday's post bulletin, letter writer Greg Rendall of Austin, Ostrander in Fillmore County observed, in urban areas subsidize rural areas. Mike McFeely's recent column pointing out how Minnesota's metro area subsidizes rural areas through state government is likely an eye-opener for some Minnesotans, but there's even more to the story. The federal government spends about equally between the urban and rural, but always takes in more taxes from urban areas. On top of that, last year farmers received an astounding 44% of their net farm income from federal ag welfare programs, when including the most important federally subsidized crop insurance program. Bottom line is that urban, mostly Democratic areas subsidize rural, mostly Republican areas. The old myth of rural folks standing on their own 2 feet has been wobbly. Our state's stingy Republicans seem unwilling to give Minneapolis some needed extra help this year. This rural Minnesotan sees that is a very unfair. I'd also like to thank city folks for their endless and kind generosity. Oh, well, you're more than welcome there, Greg. I'm glad someone up there realizes what the system is.
You know, and right now, so it's it, and that's kind of where Paul Gazelka and the rest of the Republicans are. And if I was I was in the House or the Senate, I would be pointing this out now every time there's a discussion, whether it's a committee hearing or anything else. By the way, just FYI, the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area pretty much subsidizes most rural counties in the state of Minnesota. I yield my time. And let them, why do you keep bringing that up? I don't know. Why do you keep denying giving money to Minneapolis when it needs it, when Minneapolis gives you money without bitching and moaning every five freaking seconds? Paul. Princess Paul, dear Lord. Everything about the Minnesota Republican Party is about politics. They don't give a rat's butt about the people of this state. They don't care about their own constituents. All they care about is more campaign donations, trying to find narratives to win elections, and who will give me that great cush lobbying gig when I get done. Because, I mean, they clearly do not have the best interests of Minnesota in heart. And by the way, can I say, we should. The metro area, Hennepin County itself, should probably say, no. I'm tired of your weak argument that we can't get money when we need it, when we basically subsidize all these other rural counties. It's time for you guys to step up and help us out on the rare occasion. Or we will go back to you take care of yourself, we'll take care of ours. I swear to God, if they did that, every Republican would wet themselves like, hey, we never really meant that. We appreciate what the Metro does. Hour two, that's up next. To the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, hour number two on your Friday. Matt and Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us. Hey, Brett.
Hello, Matt.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How about you?
All right. You doing any hockey games outside this weekend?
Thank God, no. I've got a doubleheader tomorrow, but it'll be warm out or cold out there.
Okay.
At least hauling stuff to the car. That's the biggest thing when you're doing these broadcasts is that I have bags and bags of stuff to haul in there. So you make two trips and the fingers get nice and cold doing that, hauling that stuff
around.
You
don't realize how warm actually an ice rink is.
Oh, I know. I need to go to the ice rink and warm up. That's about what I'm thinking after I'm done hauling that stuff in.
I was down at Iowa State, this is back before they got their new ice arena, they had this old, basically, a barn. And they used to watch the hockey games there. And this ice was atrocious because they had to keep it frozen all year round. So the permafrost had created like a bulge in the middle. So, you know, if you stood in the center of the ice, you kind of flow down. And Al Murdoch was the coach down there. But if you got in the stands, they had this heat pipe above the center that if you were right under it, you were going to get cooked. I mean, and I mean cooked. It was like 95 degrees right under it. But nowhere else. So it's like you'd see people in the stands, and the first two rows would be in all their gear, and the guys in like the middle would be like in t-shirts and shorts, and everyone at the top, it was there. It's a wonderful existence, isn't it?
That's exactly actually what happened when I broadcast a game. I think it was in Stillwater a number of years ago. They had those heaters up above, but right in the media section above me was one of those heaters. So, yeah, everyone else is wearing jackets, and I'm like wanting to get into my summer wear.
Sweating. That's a fine day for hockey here in Minnesota. Yeah. Okay, so you and I have tried to give Mike Lindell some advice. You and I have tried. We have tried. We have pleaded with the man.
We have his cardboard cutout. Why wouldn't we?
No, don't look at that right now. I'm not proud of myself. Needless to say, we've told him. I said what I've been pleading with him. I don't want you to lose your company. That's a lot of Minnesota jobs. It was announced yesterday. The one kid from Parkland that he's been a big vocal, anti-gun crusader. He's now going to start his own pillow company to take on My Pillow, which is not a good sign. But we told Mike, here's the deal. Pull the cameras together. Get all the cameras ready to go. And either get all your evidence that you insist you have. I mean, hard evidence. Here are notes, documents. Here are the file folders. Here's everything. And present it. And at least then you've got your case out there. Or grovel and apologize profusely because they are going to sue long. They're going to sue deep. So you can grovel, and I'm so sorry. So he took our advice to a point and went on to OAN, where One American News, they slapped a giant legal disclaimer on this special program warning the statements and claims expressed in this program are not intended to be taken or interpreted by the viewer as established facts. Oh, no. No, he misunderstood. We didn't say get the cameras out there and repeat your conspiracy theories. It was about getting the evidence out there, and boy, did he kind of swing and miss.
Did I read this right? This documentary was 3 hours long?
It was 2 hours. I thought it was two.
Either way, who could possibly make it
three?
Through?
No, it was three.
I thought it was three. Who could make it all the way to the end of that thing?
Sweet Jesus, I need a nap after 2 hours on this show, and I'm not, you know, grossly fondling pillows the entire time. Well, not that you can see.
I think that thing was longer than Avengers Endgame.
No, actually, that was me a little bit. It's like the Irishman. No, I mean the Irishman there. He basically said satanic forces do. Or one guy came on and said satanic forces doomed his election. They multiplied the vote totals by 0.666. Oh, for God's sakes, really? And of course, he has no evidence of any of that happening.
You don't say.
Lindell babbles nonsensically about a miracle that supposedly broke Dominion voting machine algorithms. He's basically saying that apparently, like, the dials on the vote totals were spinning up faster and faster, and it broke the algorithm. Does he understand how a computer works? I don't think it is. It's like the time dial in the Land Before Time just spins and spins. Yeah, the H.G. Wells, the Time Machine. Excuse me, I got my time traveling movies wrong there. Lindell reported voter fraud expert admitted he can't explain his own conspiracy theory. This is called Phil, including the following quote: I don't know, Mike. Lindell vows that his voters' fraud will expose the evil people in America, including Facebook CEO Mike Zuckerberg. Mike Zuckerberg. No, Mike Lindell thinks the CEO is Mark Zuckerbuck.
That didn't actually make it into the documentary, did it?
Yes, it did. Zuckerbuck.
Mark Zuckerbuck.
Like Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerbuck. a little riled up. Zuckerbuck.
This entire documentary just reminds me of some guy who goes to a public access station at like 4 in the morning and just is recording a bunch of content. No one really notices that he's there. And all of a sudden, he just cranks it up.
Exactly. It's like it's a cable access show from like 1996.
Yeah.
What'll get on the air? I don't know. Zuckerbuck sounds like a public radio folk host on the weekends. Hey, you got Zuckerbuck here. And coming up a little bit later, we're going to be talking more about peas and porridge. But right now, Mary, I can't make up enough focus artists on the spot there. But no, Zuckerbuck, it makes it into his. And then, of course, a retired general came on and talked to this is retired General Thomas McInerney, who's been a major promoter of debunked voter fraud conspiracies. He said the communists are taking over the United States. Now, where's my farm subsidies, damn it? Well, no, I don't know if that's what he said, but that's communism, so I guess we got to stop that. Huh? So he didn't take our advice. We told him, if you get the cameras on, you had two choices. You had two paths, Mike. Either prove your case, Zuckerbuck. I don't know. when your voting fraud expert's doing the okay, sure. Oh, God. Like the guy that – it's like the voting fraud guy was like – when you have a friend who says, "Oh, I know something about cars," and you crack the hood of your trunk, your car rather, you crack the hood of the car, and he takes a look, and then something over here probably, you know, it's like really. Thanks for narrowing that down.
What
it was over here somewhere, I'm guessing. Yeah, there's some stuff over there, so you got to watch that. Mike, I still think you got a chance here. I still think you got a small window. Get the cameras on. Call all the newspapers. They'll come. Trust me. Every newspaper. Say you're sorry, apologize profusely unless you've got the evidence. Because you had 3 hours on OAN and apparently you didn't deliver. If you don't have hard evidence, you can't point to a Parler stream or some guy telling me sometime down the road. If you don't have hard evidence, you need to get these cameras on there and apologize profusely and say, I'm sorry, take a break. Sign off social media for, well, you're not on social media anymore, but, you know, just get, you know, go take a vacation and just get away from this, but apologize profusely and hopefully you might be able to save your company. All right. That's my suggestion. I would stop with the OAN stuff.
I would too. His political career is probably shot. Now he's just got to save his company.
I don't think – well, let's put it this way. When OAN is putting up disclaimers on you, I will say this. I don't think his political career is shot at all.
You don't think so?
Oh, I think he is the Minnesota GOP's worst nightmare because he will – all you need to do is get the most crazy people in the Republican Party, that 40% that still thinks QAnon's legit and that you know, these people, they didn't do anything when they try to kill Vice President Mike Pence, that they get those people and they will show up for Mike Lindell. Don't be surprised if Lindell is the nominee if he runs.
I don't think he could win a general election, though, once he has to get into the metro area. No,
God, no. Neuberger would have a better chance at winning a general election against a statewide candidate. And they called Neuberger's case at what? Was it? We said it was going to be 2 minutes. It was 1.5. They called that race.
Oh, you were wrong on that.
It was faster than that.
Faster than you said, yes.
Lindell, they wouldn't even wait for the polls to close. Let's just go talk to who we know is going to win. here's Governor Walz ready for his second term. You, speaking of Democrats, you have a humdinger of an interview coming up.
Yeah, we got the majority leader in the House, Ryan Winkler, talking with me today as a couple of topics we covered. One is cannabis legalization. And what I was surprised about in the interview, he is a little more optimistic than I thought, that maybe they could get something through in the Republican-controlled Senate and actually force a vote on the floor, which would be key to trying to debunk some of these things where we're seeing these third-party candidates. So we touch on that and then get into a little bit on the COVID relief bill as well. And Republicans, of course, lack of action on that.
All right. It is Brett Johnson, Ryan Winkler, kind enough to join us right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So after the 2020 elections, a number of states legalized adult-use cannabis, including our neighbors to the west, South Dakota, in a very shocking development, at least to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people thinking, wow, South Dakota legalized adult-use cannabis before Minnesota. But of course, we do have a bill working its way through the Minnesota legislature that would legalize adult-use cannabis, and one of the key players in that bill is Ryan Winkler. He is the current House Majority Leader, and he is from District 46A, which includes portions of the West Metro, like Golden Valley, Plymouth, and St. Louis Park. Hey, Ryan Winkler, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Sure, happy to be here.
Absolutely, Ryan. So tell us about what's in this cannabis legalization bill that you're proposing, and what are the main objectives of it? Obviously, it would legalize adult-use cannabis, but there are a lot of other benefits that would be in this bill, too. So talk about that.
Well, the main thing that we want to do is end the criminal prohibition of cannabis and the deep racial injustices that we are seeing and have seen for a long time in the way that our cannabis laws are enforced. In addition to disproportionate arrest rates and disproportionate imprisonment, we also see long-term consequences for people who are caught up in this system. To make it worse, we waste resources. We don't effectively control some of the harms that do exist for cannabis. And we end up depriving a lot of people of the benefit of using cannabis, whether they are veterans, seniors who find some relief in it, or people who just want to use it for their own personal decisions because they can make safe decisions as adults on how to use it.
And how does the bill that you're proposing compare to some of the other states that have recently legalized it, including Illinois and South Dakota? Because as I've taken a look through it, it's certainly one of the most progressive legalization bills I think we've seen in the entire country.
Well, we want to end the black market. We want to make sure that we are creating a safe, regulated marketplace where people can get access to a product and know what they're getting. We want to expunge criminal records of people who've been involved in the criminal side of this business for, you know, the last many years. And we want to make sure that we are creating an equitable marketplace, equitable in the sense that people who have been caught up in the criminal system have a chance to enter. Communities that have been hard hit by the war on drugs are able to be part of the business upside of it. And we want to make this a Minnesota-based craft and small business kind of industry. So we're able to do a lot of those things in this bill. And we're just starting through the committee hearing process, and we think it will get better along the way. But the goal is really to make a safe legal product, right past wrongs, and get Minnesota the ability to use this product in a way that meets their personal needs.
So let's say that someone is 21 years or older and they're interested in recreationally using cannabis in Minnesota. And if this bill were to go through and get passed into law, what would that process look like for someone who, of course, is of age and legally able to buy cannabis in Minnesota for adult use? What would that process look like?
Well, we would have a system set up where you have to have a license in order to be a grower, a manufacturer, a distributor, and a retailer. Every community in Minnesota would have to participate. Of course, local zoning laws would apply. But if you are of legal age and able to buy, then you would go to a retailer in your community. Potentially, there could be a delivery service. And there would be various products with dosage requirements, packaging limitations, and so forth. And you could go into a store and buy it.
Oh,
I should also say that we do allow a limited amount of home grow for cannabis, up to 8 total plants, 4 of which can be producing cannabis at any one time.
Yeah, there are a lot of benefits in there, including the idea that, yeah, people can be allowed to grow it on their own, which, of course, is obviously illegal right now. And in many other states, that's the case, too. And I like the benefit you're talking about as well, where you can also potentially have it delivered. So certainly a lot of good things to like. But another part I want to focus on is that criminal justice reform that you were alluding to a few moments ago. Now, obviously, we know with this legalization bill, Republicans are still in the majority in the Senate, and Paul Gazelka, the majority leader, pretty much has no interest in legalizing cannabis. But what about at least the criminal justice reforms that are being proposed? Could we at least see some action on this during the session in terms of maybe expunging records and other criminal justice reforms?
Well, first of all, I have not given up hope that we can get this done. When South Dakota legalized, cannabis got almost as many votes as Donald Trump did in a very conservative state. And I'm hearing from my Republican colleagues that they're interested in doing this. The real challenge, of course, is Senator Gazelka and his desire to be able to have Republicans basically falsify themselves as cannabis candidates in order to spoil our elections. But I think that the more obvious that is and the stronger the bipartisan support we have, the more difficult it is for him to continue holding on to that position. So we'll see. I'm not giving up hope. And if we can't get that, then certainly opponents are starting to talk already about making our medical program work better. And they are beginning to talk about the injustices in the current system. So I'm not giving up hope on the whole package. And I'm already seeing signs that on the criminal justice side, as well as the medical side, that we might be able to make some progress.
And as you said, in South Dakota, they obviously legalized that last fall. And even if you look at polling numbers along the lines of Republicans, conservatives, and even Trump voters, there is a surprising amount of support for legalizing it. So the question is, at least politically, how do you connect the dots that it's actually Republicans that are holding up this bill and holding us up from being able to actually legalize it?
Well, when the House moves a bill through and we pick up bipartisan support as we go along and send the bill over to the Senate, we expect that they'll have to have a vote at some point, and then we'll see what they do with it. And, you know, that's the point. Once the advocates and the people who are paying attention to this see action and see what kind of bill we're creating and that we're working with Republicans, it will be harder for Senator Gazelka to say that this is about a policy difference. Instead, it looks more and more like just, a partisan election play that he's trying to hold on to.
Yeah, and let's be honest, that's completely what it is, because I imagine if you were to candidly talk with a number of Republicans, whether they're in the House or the Senate, they probably would be in favor or just say, eh, I don't really care that much, let's just go through, get this done with, get it over with. But they, of course, see many electoral benefits by keeping it illegal in Minnesota, as we saw last fall, where for the most part, that pretty much cost the DFL the majority when we had a number of third-party legalized cannabis candidates running in some of these legislative of races that were siphoning off votes away from DFLers. So I don't know necessarily how you combat that in the 2022 election cycle and beyond, because the way I look at it, as long as Republicans are able to siphon votes away from DFLers with these third party candidates, they probably aren't going to have much motivation to actually get this bill passed.
Well, I think it starts by showing our genuine commitment to getting this done, and then we are looking at all options through the campaign season to address this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I even had someone suggest, well, what if we just had people run QAnon candidates to siphon votes away from Republicans to maybe try something along their playbooks? But yeah, certainly it's going to be very tough. And yeah, you guys will be going through and trying to figure out a political strategy to get this done. And another question I had, just to go back to what you were talking about in terms of forcing a floor vote on the Senate, that would be possible if it does pass the House. Is that what you were saying?
Well, I don't want to get too deep into legislative strategy, but in one form or another, we would expect that the Senate will have to let its position be known pretty clearly.
Now, you also held some listening sessions around the state talking about legalization of cannabis. The DFL has been doing this for the past, I believe, year plus or so. Curious to hear what you were hearing from constituents, whether they're in the metro or outstate Minnesota, or even from different political persuasions. What were you hearing as you guys were conducting those listening sessions?
What I found interesting is that we heard pretty much the same thing every place we went. We heard that the medical program is too restrictive and too expensive for people to be able to use it, that veterans and seniors were finding a health benefit and that they would like cannabis to be legalized so it's more affordable and easier for them to get access to it. We heard the statewide understanding of the racial injustice in our criminal approach to this. And we just heard from a lot of people who think that they should be able to safely use this product and not be criminalized for doing something that is less dangerous than alcohol and cigarettes.
We're speaking with Ryan Winkler. He is the House Majority Leader, representing District 46A, portions of the West Metro, including Golden Valley, Plymouth, and St. Louis Park. Want to switch gears and, of course, talk about one other topic that is big at the state legislature, and that has to do with additional COVID relief. What sorts of relief are we looking at least in the House of Representatives here in the state, and what could we possibly do on the Senate side to get a bill put together to allow Minnesotans to have more additional relief, even after we potentially are going to get something passed at the federal level?
We are looking at a big range of things. With our labor partners, we are working on legislation to make sure that essential frontline workers are getting emergency paid leave like they need. We're looking at making sure that as the hospitality sector goes back to work, that the workers who were laid off get to be first in line for being hired back. We're working on bills to protect poultry and meatpacking workers from disease and making sure that they are safe when they go back to work or as this disease continues. We're also looking at making sure that Minnesotans have access to childcare and housing and all the other kinds of basic economic security measures that are essential under COVID. What's really promising is the level of federal action, the fact that the Biden and Joe Biden and Senate and House leaders are determined to pass a big package regardless whether Republicans feel good about it or not. And that federal relief is really a much larger scale than what the state has resources to provide. And I am very hopeful that between federal action and our state action, Minnesotans will be well positioned to come out of this pandemic better off in some ways than we were going into it.
Yeah, and obviously at the federal level, getting additional state and local aid would certainly be a big piece of that bill nationally, and that would have a big impact, I would think, in the state legislature as well, to get access to those additional federal funds to help things out, because as you said, it's tough to do this at the state level when we're looking at the scale of the issues that we're facing right now with COVID-19. So, yeah, certainly if we get something at the national level that would provide additional state aid, it would go a long way to helping us.
It would. I'm also, we haven't talked much about it, but the fact that they're looking at a $15 an hour federal minimum wage.
Yes.
And, you know, we also are looking at longer term economic security issues, like making sure that we have a robust public option in healthcare so people can get access to affordable health insurance if they're not getting it other places. We're making sure that paid family and medical leave is a top priority so that we don't end up in this situation again. We're trying to create a child care system that allows everyone to get access to child care in Minnesota in a way that's affordable. So it's not just the short-term relief, which we'll work on with our federal partners, but it's also laying the ground for a more equitable state going forward and a more economically secure state going forward.
And you just mentioned something about a possible public option here in Minnesota. I know that's been proposed over the years with different ways that people could potentially buy into Minnesota Care. Are we looking at doing another type of bill like that this year? Because I would think with the pandemic, that would only just exacerbate the needs for having an actual public option for people to be able to buy into, whether at the federal level or here in Minnesota, allowing people the option to buy into Minnesota Care.
Yeah, we have a very robust, strong bill. It's already had one bill hearing, and we'll begin moving through the process as we go forward. And, you know, we're kind of at the part of the legislative session where we're getting bills ready. We're starting the hearings. We're not ready to pass them yet because we have to go through the steps of public input and so forth. But I think you'll have a very strong package of legislation coming through the Minnesota House this year to protect Minnesotans' health, to protect their families and their incomes, to create economic security in the years ahead, and to invest in the public services that Minnesotans really count on to have a good quality of life. I think it will be a very strong session for us.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of good bills that you guys are proposing over there in the State House, and hopefully we see a number of these get enacted into state law. So lots to follow along in the current legislative session. That is House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler, District 46A, which includes portions of Golden Valley, Plymouth, and St. Louis Park, as he was joining us to talk about cannabis legalization and some of the other bills working their way through the state legislature. Representative Winkler, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
It was my pleasure. Have a good afternoon.
All right, got it recorded, Ryan. Hey, thanks again for the time. Always appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Take care.
All right, that's your Friday interview here on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. The Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Another 22,643 Minnesotans received at least the first dose of the coronavirus or the COVID-19 vaccine, bringing the total to 497,843. Tomorrow we should go over 500,000, which is great because now we're starting to get a dent in there. Now, at least once again, that's just one dose at least. Both doses have been given to 138,212 state residents, an increase of about 9,500. Slow but sure, we'll get there. State health officials estimate that 9% of the state's population has gotten at least one of the two recommended shots. Among those 65 and older, the number is 23.1. 22 more deaths announced by the Minnesota Department of Health on Friday. All of them age 60 or older. The number of new COVID-19 infections reported in the state was 1,054. Definitely have seen a downturn. In the amount of cases. Now, doesn't mean we're going to just dismiss the people who are dying, for goodness sakes. These are human beings. Every one of them is valuable. All my best. If you are in a family that's had to deal with this loss, everyone here at AM 950, we are so sorry. This is just such a horrible pandemic, and we'll get through this. And I know it's not going to be easy for the time being, but, you know, we're thinking of you, all our best, all of our prayers. Thank you for staying with us and for I don't know where to go with it. I mean, it's just so much. I mean, I was at Eden Prairie, the the where you walk around Purgatory Creek in Eden Prairie, there's a veterans memorial. And you realize more people have died in 1 year of coronavirus than died in any of these wars. Any of these wars. And that's something as a veteran, I've always kind of gone there and like this. This is getting very hard for me to wrap my head around. And so I know I'm not exactly the best at words right now, but I'm very sorry for your loss. I'm very sorry for your loss. And for everyone who's got a person who is dealing with this, all my best there. Hopefully they'll get through that. All right. Since the pandemic was first detected in Minnesota, 6,273 have passed away from the coronavirus. Diagnostic labs reported 38,947 test results from the state, down from more than 50,000 on the previous day. So it's getting to a point where we're not seeing the bad numbers that we were consistently seeing. The problem is stuff like the Super Bowl. Everyone's saying, just try not to get together with people at the Super Bowl. And we already know people are going to be like, we watch the Super Bowl is more important than trying to be safe in public. So we'll probably see an increase on that. 952-946-6205. So was it yesterday or Wednesday we talked about Commissioner Matt Look? Was that yesterday? I don't think you and I talked about
it. I don't
think so. No, it was on Wednesday.
We
brought up Anoka County Commissioner Matt Look because there was a woman, Danielle Pearden, who, for lack of a better way to say it, was being harassed by the county commissioner and clearly was being harassed by the county commissioner. There were some what seemed to me at least to be some clear threats, and the police were called, and apparently the police indeed did talk to Commissioner Matt Look. You know, regardless of how you want to interpret this guy's communications, the reality is he is just it's creepy. At best, you can say this guy's hounding of this woman who repeatedly asked him to stop texting her is creepy. And the fact that he actually contacted her, she had contacted the Anoka County Commissioners, and the Anoka County Commissioners had basically said, there's not much we can do about it. Just, you know, try to avoid them. And then he actually got in contact with Danielle Pearden, and said, oh, I'm, you know, Matt Look's boss. Well, it was actually himself at his own business. And so he's trying to do wordsmithy stuff anyway. So needless to say, kind of creepy. I kind of thought that would be the end of it. I was a little shocked that the Anoka County Commissioners don't have any kind of, you know, code of conduct or ethics, but apparently they don't. And so you got a bunch of people looking around going, I don't know. You know, it is kind of harassment. Well, now another woman has come forward with accusations similar to those of Danielle Pearden, who said she became afraid for her safety after Look harassed her in text and suggested he knew where she lived. That's the second time this guy's done this that we know of. Pearden brought her allegations, first reported in the Star Tribune, to county leaders and local law enforcement last month. Commissioner Mandy Misner said she was disturbed to read the details of Look's interactions with constituents, particularly women, because of her volunteer work with the Alexandra House, a women's shelter in Blaine. She said she believes elected officials should be held to a higher standard of conduct and has asked that the board discuss implementing a code of ethics at its upcoming workshop. Here's the problem is you can input in this code of ethics for the upcoming workshop. There's basically – you can't make it necessarily retroactive. And so this guy's behavior is basically going to go unpunished, and this guy should not be – if he has done this now to two different women – where he has put out a veiled threat twice now, then clearly he needs to be removed as the county commissioner. But it sounds like you don't have any process for doing that. Unethical conduct of an elected official is unacceptable and it should not be repeated, Messner said. Look, who has served on the county board for the past decade, my guess. What do you bet there's a lot more of this?
I mean, just looking at other examples, you know, I mean, this stuff usually tends to repeat itself. You know?
Yeah, like I don't get the impression. Like I said, I've had some of these, you know, like county chairs or city council members, and you know, kind of do these veiled threat things to me. I was like, oh, okay, veiled, and I just call it, hey, veiled threat. Okay, let me just put those out, and yeah. You know, they kind of go away. But I mean, if you're kind of a private citizen, I mean, you might not feel where you have the chance to go. I can't say for sure. We know of two cases now. Would I be surprised if there are more? Not at all. He served on the county board for the past decade. He said he didn't harass Puritan. He said in an email Thursday evening that he looks forward to the conversation on code of ethics. Freedom of speech will be an interesting hurdle. So, God, you're a slimeball, dude. Your whole argument is... Is this what your whole argument is? Your freedom of speech is going to be violated if you can't harass people? Is that what the argument's going to be? Yikes. He added that he hasn't fielded any calls for resignation. Me. I'm going to make that. I think you should resign, dude. I think you really. I'll make it. Hello. Me. I don't live in your county, but. I'll make the suggestion. He hasn't fielded any calls for resignation. I will not resign for following up with someone who has continued to harass me on social media, he said. Okay. Okay, stop for a second. You're saying you're following up with them, but then you're saying they're harassing you. So if your story is true, then you're an idiot. I mean, this is your story, not mine. If your story is the person's harassing me, so I keep contacting them, well, then you're just a complete and total moron, Matt Look, if that's true. That's the way I would take it. Pearden's interaction with Look began on Facebook, where Look posted a message on January 6th that Pearden interpreted as supporting the insurrection at the Capitol. Pearden reached out for another commissioner to express her concerns to ask if Look had a supervisor. Soon she began receiving text messages from Look, who claimed to be Matt Look's boss with the Anoka County Commission, with the Anoka County Administration. He wasn't, basically. It was him himself, it sounds like. Text messages provided the Star Tribune show. Pearden asked Look to stop texting her 6 times, each time eliciting a response from Look before filling out a report on January 12th with St. Francis Police. Look continued to text Pearden after that, and she notified police, who told Look to stop contacting her. By the way, the picture that goes with this photo, this story, it's everything you can imagine. You just take your mental image of what you think Matt Look looks like. Bingo. The allegations are similar to those of Rachel Keller, who contacted Ramsey Police September 3rd after she said Look threatened her on Facebook. According to a police report, Keller told police she had made a political post. She told police Keller made a political post on Facebook regarding Look, who then sent her a private message about the post. He at one point told her, game over. The victim felt that this was a threat, the report said. Police advised Keller that game over was not a terrorist threat and could hold multiple meetings. Yeah, it could also mean a threat. By the way, great police work there, Barney and Andy. Hey, let's try to make excuses for the guy, all right? Game over. He just might like Donkey Kong. Okay. The victim understood and did not want me to contact Look for fear he would escalate the behavior. Yeah. Commissioner Mike Gamchi said he would have handled the situation with Pearden differently. You think? And, in fact, avoids official county business on social media. Good call on that. I would make that's a solid call. It's difficult to grasp because I just don't understand why anyone would get involved in these types of things. This isn't the reason I ran for office and got elected. My work here is to work with my fellow commissioners to get the work of the public done. Commissioners Julie Brasted, who, by the way, seems to be the individual who contacted Look when she got the complaint from the original complainer here and from the first story, Robin West and Jeff Reiner did not respond to requests for comment, Board Chairman Scott Schulte declined to comment, but in a Thursday email to a constituent said, Commissioner Look and his personality traits are something that his district needs to deal with. Well, so basically they're punting it to the next election for the county commissioner. The county board and no other county board in Minnesota has – this county board and no other county board in Minnesota has a code of ethics to live up to. Is that for real? That there is not one single county board in the state that has a code of ethics? I guess it's not – I've never heard of a county commissioner. I've never heard of a, you know, a parks and rec commission, you know, board member or a water table guy or, you know, a planning and zoning guy. I've never heard of anything like this where they're going on out there and, you know, harassing one of their constituents. So I guess maybe I'm not too surprised about that. They don't have a code of conduct. As Schulte said in an email to Anoka resident Logan Thompson, who contacted Schulte about Look's alleged conduct, we don't have a social media policy for elected officials either. You probably want to get that into place. Thompson said he reached out to Schulte because he believes there should be some kind of discipline for Look. I think the whole situation can be summed up in one word, inappropriate, Thompson said. The only way we're going to recover from this is to have checks and balances and hold people responsible. Other county residents expressed similar concerns. So it goes through and talks about this. Yeah, I think it's a good call to just say, clearly there's something going on with this guy. And the last thing you want, I mean, I'm just going to say it. I mean, the last thing you want is a county commissioner actually making an undeniable threat against a constituent and then not having any way to punish the person. I'm not going to resign. I think I was justified or something like that. I think you're going to have to put that code of conduct in. And I mean, yikes. I think someone needs to sit down with this guy, with Mr. Look, and have a long conversation about what is and what is not appropriate. 952-946-6205. Me personally, I think he should resign. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll do some dancing. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. I miss George Michael too, man. The guy had some good dance songs. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Just a reminder, we've got Native Roots Radio coming up here in just a little bit. Robert Pilot and crew ready to go. If you're not listening, that's a good thing. And by the way, I should mention this. I think that now that the Washington football team is changing its name, there are a lot of people, and we talked about this when Hank Aaron died. They need to rechange the name of the Atlanta baseball team. Change it to the Hammers, for God's sakes. That's a freaking brilliant mascot name. The Hammers for Hank Aaron. That's a great idea. The Kansas City football team, many others, they need to change their names. And I hope that we are finally at a point when we can grow up and realize that propagating other people's cultures as a symbol when those cultures don't want us to do it is probably not the best idea. And so hopefully we can move forward there. I don't know. The Kansas City Barbecues, they're the most delicious team in the NFL. Oh, I mean, no one down to the Smoky Joe's Barbecue down in Kansas City. They can call them the Joe's? No, that's dodgeball. They can't do that, no. So, all right. So what we got for some music today? I got You Spin Me Right Round, Baby, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like a record, baby. Round, 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 round.
Something like that.
Dead or Alive is going to take me out. I'll be dancing on the screen so you can watch this. You have yourself a good weekend. I will be back on a Monday. Till then, see ya.